Let me begin by thanking Dr. Lee and Eli for the chance to be here. You may hear from my accent that I'm not from close to here. If there isn't time for simultaneous translation, and so if understanding what I'm saying is a problem, the Twitter handle at the bottom right gives you an opportunity to look at your phone for the next 15 minutes and pretend that you're tweeting about what I'm speaking about. So there's a get out of jail free clause for you. The other thing I'd say is many people may know the parable of the frog and the bicycle. If you don't, that might be a good opportunity for a question or a discussion at the end of the session. Let me just give you the disclosure that there's nothing I need to disclose. So let me start with the good news. The good news is that obesity and childhood obesity is preventable. And we do actually have evidence of successful prevention of childhood obesity. The group I work for, the WHO Collaborating Centre in Obesity Prevention, has run four of these trials in Australia. And the key to those is that they were community-based trials. They were community-led, community-owned, and the role of the academic was really to support that with process and evaluation and feedback. The key to those interventions being successful was increasing community capacity. So in each of the communities where childhood obesity was prevented, capacity to respond to the problem increased relative to the comparison groups where there was no change in capacity. So hold on to that thought. But what we found is that in those communities where obesity was prevented in children, the intervention lasted only as long as the dose. As soon as the money ran out, as soon as the project workers moved on to something else, as soon as the intervention lost its fizz, if I can call it that, those kids went back to the baseline population prevalence. So it only lasted as long as the dose. That led us to thinking hard about issues of implementation and sustainability, and that led us to the use of systems thinking, which I'll talk a bit about one approach we're using today. I won't talk about the range of different possible systems techniques you could use. I'll just show you one in particular. But that's led us to this notion of systems thinking. And the starting point for all of this, of course, is obesity is incredibly simple, right? I mean, it's very basic. It's energy in, energy out. So you take less energy in or spend more energy, then it's very straightforward. And, of course, it is slightly more complicated than that. And this is the foresight model for obesity prevention. Energy balance is in the middle here. And this is incredibly helpful for a couple of reasons. If you're a consultant, this is a gold mine to be able to say, I can explain this for you. But it says a few things. It says this is a non-linear problem. It says we can't focus on a single behaviour. It says if we focus on one part of this system and ignore the rest, it's probably the reason why all of our traditional health promotion efforts have failed. Now, our starting point was that increasing community capacity to understand and respond to the problem is a key ingredient in the success. It's the dose. It's the thing on the spoon that works. But we know we have to address this complexity, and we have to increase the community's capacity to do so. That was the challenge we faced, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about how we've tackled that using some of systems thinking. I'm going to present in particular some results from this paper here, some more opportunities to look at your phone and iPad down the bottom there. But equally, there are three new interventions, and as you can see, the logo on the right has got a typo in it, and that's because it's the community's logo and it's a draft. So literally, these are community-led things, one in a place called Hamilton, Generate Change, one in a place called Portland, not Oregon, I should stress, called Sea Change, and one called Y Change in Yarriambiack. Each of these communities are using an approach to systems thinking to help their community understand the way they're going to respond to childhood obesity. And the critical tagline we use every time we work with a community is it's within remit, within interest, and within capacity. So it's not relying on external money coming in, because we've discovered, we know that external ring fence funding is a guarantee to fail in terms of sustainability, because when the money's withdrawn, the intervention stops. The other thing I should mention is the Cochrane Review points out we need community-led, community-owned, multi-strategy, multi-level responses. So just hold on to that thought for a moment. Here is the best map I could find to show where Australia was. It's the first one I could find. I don't know how accurate it is. But Australia, as you can see, is top and centre. And I'll be talking specifically about several communities in Victoria, a state of Australia. The communities I'm talking about are comprising the Great South Coast, and that's around about 600,000 people altogether. So just to locate us a little bit there. The technique that we applied comes directly from system dynamics, and it's called group model building. This I need to acknowledge in great depth Peter Hovman and his team at WashU and St. Louis. They've been a really important collaborator for us and taught us a lot of this work and a lot of the technique I'm going to show you. The group model building technique we've used brings together community leaders, and in the first two sessions we have 30 community leaders or less, and these are the real key leaders with authorising environments and capacity to provide serious levels of support across the community. And we have two 90-minute meetings with those, which I'll show you in a moment. And we're deliberately short-circuiting this process because the community leaders can't give you 5 or 6 days of effort. We're deliberately trying to do this in quite a hurry. So one of the beautiful things about this approach is it is a community-led process. It's deliberately intended to engage the community and help the community understand the complexity of systems and respond. The starting point is to think of obesity as a dynamic problem. These are all of the different studies across Australia over the last 30 years or so with anything like real data, and we present this as a dynamic problem. This is a prevalence that's changing over time. One of the major advances we've had is we've created a sustainable monitoring system where we now measure above 95% of kids using local capacity. So that's a game changer because the distribution of the standard study versus an opt-out consent study don't even overlap. And when we go to the community leaders and we say, we have measured your kids, not a national sample, not a representative sample, your kids, and the prevalence in grade 4 girls is 58% and you can't ignore it anymore, it fundamentally changes the conversation in that community. This is a major first step. Those community leaders are asked to think about obesity as a dynamic problem and consider the other changes over time that are also dynamic. So we're not talking about static issues here, we're talking about things that are changing over time. You're not expected to read this, but these are then put around a circle and we build what's known as a connection circle. So very simply, the community leaders, we ask the question, what's connected and how in your particular community? So we're not trying to borrow from Foresight, which is a top-down expert-led model built all around the world with the world's leaders. What does this community think are the key drivers of the problem? We take back to those 30 people a first cut of what's called a causal loop diagram, and this is a base picture of the complexity of the drivers of obesity in that particular community and the ways in which they're interrelated. Our next step is to ask those community leaders, because what we've done is we've taught them that complexity is important, we've taught them how to build a picture of that and share it, and we've taught them how to teach others. Those community leaders, 30 of them, are then asked to identify change agents within the community and bring them to a community meeting. In that community meeting, each of those community leaders works with between 10 and 15 of the change agents to teach them about complexity and to guide them through the process of planning a response on behalf of that community. Terrible for your ego as an academic not to ride in on a white horse and solve the problem for everyone, but what we're bringing is a process to help that community solve it for themselves. So this is the first cut of an obesity map in a place called Portland, population of 10,000, very low socioeconomic status area. And the basis for the planning they've done. And I'll just walk you through one particular section of it. We present it to them in domain so it can make sense, so it's useful, and utility is high on our work. I'm going to show you one part of the fast food and junk food story, but equally I just want you to consider that's connected right across the system. So every time these community leaders and the change agents are thinking about what should we do about childhood obesity in our town, in our city, they're thinking about it in relation to the broadest complexity of the drivers in their region. So to give you a sense, if you look on the right there, this is essentially a cut of a causal loop diagram. And if we can care about sugar consumption, we're very worried about sugar consumption. One of the things this says is that the consumption of soft drinks leads to sugar consumption. Okay, fair enough. Health promotion 101 10 years ago would have been, we shouldn't drink so much soft drink. Tell them not to drink any more soft drink. But that's also driven in this particular place by the need to purchase bottled water. So the need to purchase bottled water is increasing consumption of soft drink. And in fact, it's the perceived water quality that's driving the need to purchase bottled water. I have to be careful what I say here because people in Portland get upset when I say it, but nobody drinks the water in Portland because it tastes hideous. In fact, it's got a green tinge to it and you're kind of nervous having a shower. But the driver of sugar-sweetened beverage consumption in this town is not actually straight choice, it's that there isn't another choice. So in fact, when a parent is in the supermarket with their kids, they're buying bottled water because they can't drink what comes out of the tap. 2 litres of water costs $4. 2 litres of Coke costs $2. and you've got two kids influencing your decision, which one do you choose? You choose the Coke. And if we follow the picture around, the need to purchase bottled water actually decreases consumption of water, which in turn is leading to increased sugar consumption. 10 years ago, I was involved, and many of us will have been involved in interventions where we have to increase consumption of water. So we say, right, let's tell kids to consume more water. And this just demonstrates the complex drivers that are pushing in the opposite direction, that if you don't take them into account, you're going to fail. It's almost a guarantee. On the left-hand side there, this is Diane Feingood's summary of Donella Meadows' 12 places to intervene in a system. And essentially it goes from easiest at the top to hardest at the bottom, from least effective to most effective. And so just to run through it very quickly, so what we do is we take the community, we teach them how to read the systems map, we ask them to come up with as many ideas of how they can intervene and why, and they then have to think about that in terms of impact and feasibility. And feasibility is a function of interest, remit and capacity. If this isn't sustainable, it's not worth doing. Foreign trade policy with the US is a really good intervention. Frankly, we can't do very much about it. So acting on an existing variable would be just saying consume more water. Really easy to do, really low cost, probably not terribly effective. Working on an existing connections, we might do something about perceived water quality because it hits multiple parts of this system at the same time. Still relatively easy to do and low cost, but still not very effective. If we begin creating or removing connections, what if we had a diet drink subsidy? What if we increased the amount of quality water? If we add a goal and work across multiple levels, and then I won't talk about paradigm shift, that's a different hour. And this is what Portland has actually done. So the solid red lines are things that have already been enacted, and the dotted red lines are things that are in train. We use a term called emergence from a complex adaptive systems theory, where we're not actually telling this community what to do. What arises, we can't really predict. They formed a water working group. I never would have thought of it. In that water working group, they had a tap advocate. This is someone who got excited and a bit nuts about taps. And they said, you know what the problem is? We don't have enough taps that are delivering enough healthy water to kick this system over. So they went and counted the taps. And they went to the council, local government, and they said, we haven't got a single tap where you can drink water. There isn't available out of faucet, I should say, is the same as a tap. And so the council policy is changing, where new builds, renovations, any licensed premises has to provide a certain number of faucets that provide healthy, tasty water. You can't get a license, you can't get in the building code unless you provide drinkable water. And the tap advocate isn't leaving it at that. They're actually going back and counting how many taps comply with that policy. Very short feedback loop, straight into policy change. If we think one of the golden rules of health promotion is we've got to get reach, we've got to go to scale, we've got to get, you know, we've heard all of that before. This is reaching to every single household. The other thing the Water Working Group did is they went to the CEO of the water company and they said, Look at this picture here. We've got childhood obesity, overweight and obesity rates at 54% of our kids. It's going to affect their educational attainment. It's going to affect our economic sustainability. It affects their social engagement. It affects everything, all of these different things. And the key driver is the taste of the water. The CEO of the water company lives 2.5 hours away and has never been to Portland. And that's not fair, and don't quote me on that either, but you get what I'm trying to say. Looked at this picture and said, oh, the water taste is actually just a function of the chemicals we're using to clean the water. We can change that overnight, if you like, and try something else. So again, just putting this on the agenda, just understanding the complexity, shifted the discussion completely. CEO said, in the meantime, how about I provide water coolers with fresh drinking water to all of the schools and to all of the public places, and let's get water tankers and council policy where we have free, tasty water at events. Now, bear in mind, remember I showed you a system 2 or 3 slides ago that had somewhere in the region of 50 or 60 different variables in it, connected by more than 100 different ways. This sort of work is happening right across that whole system, and it's not us deciding on what the ideas should be and how they should work. It's rather that community using that understanding of complexity to drive these interventions for themselves. And I said at the start, the Cochrane Review, multi-level, multi-strategy, multi-component, and not just in single settings. In Portland, they know of 200 different actions happening at multiple levels, be it from individual level through to workplaces and clubs. They know there's another 300 that they can't track. And again, if I think back to health promotion 10 or 15 years ago, the only way we could get a grant is to say, here is the single intervention we're testing to the randomisation of all others. We just finished some work in Southern Grampians with Community Leaders Planning Forum. We got 30 advocates to sign up. We had 160 people come to a community event. We had to run another one with 160 people because of the demand. So this is a community that's saying, yes, we want to take hold of this, and we're taking them through that planning process. And I should also say, down the bottom there, it says there's 187 different action ideas. What we do with the community is theme those into working groups. And so people join a working group based on remit, capacity and interest. So if it's within your day job, be it at council, be it as a health promotion officer or as an educator, to deal with this particular problem, then by all means join up. If you can't commit, if it's not sustainable for you, then don't. So the process I've just described to you is incredibly labour intensive. It takes two 90-minute sessions with the 20 or 30 community leaders, and then we take 160 to 300 people through a half-day session to understand those system dynamic maps. We give them the evidence base about what we know works in the prevention of obesity, and then we give them the challenge. What are the different things you can do within this system that are going to prevent obesity? Be that disrupt this system, working within the system, or working on the system. We are moving to building dynamic models where we quantify the way that these actions are moving through that complex system, but that maybe is for next year's or next meeting. The other issue is of going to scale. So the process I talked about is really quite labour intensive. This software that we've built, we're training community leaders to be able to run the systems thinking workshops using this particular piece of software so that they can take other people in the community to the point where they understand and have built a causal loop diagram that represents the complexity of the system, and then they can use this to share that, identify the best places to intervene, and then track how and where their system responds over time. So my last slide is just to say we're surprised about the power that systems thinking actually has, and particularly this process of group model building. We've been running these for the last 5 years with some 2,000 or 3,000 people. One of our very early successes was on the left here, Councillor Schwartz. Turned up at the meeting late, wasn't interested, didn't like health promotion. 20 minutes later, he'd rung the other councillors and got sugar-sweetened beverages banned across a whole municipality because he saw the complexity and that he actually had a role. If we think about all the other municipalities that are having so much trouble with sugar-sweetened beverages, it was the short turnaround time between understanding the complexity and acting, and frankly, they're a bit out of the way and no one noticed, but they did it overnight. Top right, Australian Capital Territory, some 350,000 people banned sugar-sweetened beverages, and they used a causal loop diagram to demonstrate why it needed to be done. And on the bottom, this is some work we're doing in Fiji, where we're helping them work out from the systems point of view how to get legislation through Parliament on the banning of soft drink. They got the legislation written and approved, and every time it goes to Parliament, their equivalent of the agriculture lobby fights back, and they just keep hitting this blocker and stopping. From a systems point of view, they're starting to understand the feedback loops they could use to get over this particular hurdle and get the legislation passed, and that's expected to happen in the next little while. So thank you very much for your attention. I just want to acknowledge the funding sources. On the right are the stickers. Each of my PhD students has to generate a sticker and a study name, and we take PhD students from all over. So if anyone's interested, we're very welcome to hear from you. Thank you very much.